Hi, welcome to Fire Grind Strategies and Other Stuff from the Street with Anthony Avillo and Jim Duffy on Fire Engineering Talk Radio, where firefighters come to share their knowledge, their ideas, their opinions, and most of all, have a little bit of fun at the same time. So stay tuned and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the July edition of Fireground Strategies and Other Stuff from the Street with retired Deputy Chief Anthony Avillo and me. I'm Jim Duffy, retired Battalion Chief, and we're ready to go and talk about some stuff. Tonight, I'd like to talk about something we don't usually talk about. We usually talk about decision-making and running the fireground, but tonight I think we're going to talk about the promotional process. Chief Avillo, before we get started, how are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. I'm just, like we talked about, I'm taking care of the brown lawn here in New Jersey. I'm about to get sprinklered. Yeah, everything's dry. Weather's been like brutally hot here.
Yeah,
but, you know, can't complain if it wasn't, if, you know, beginning of the season, it was cold. So everybody was complaining about the cold weather, you know, so it's what it is, I guess, right?
It is. The only thing I'm going to sit there and talk about for me, you know, I missed the job terribly, and I know you do too, because we talk about this all the time. So when it's 97, 98 degrees with 70% humidity, 60% humidity and the dew point in the high 70s. I am so glad I'm retired. I don't want to put turnout gear on in weather like this. I feel so bad for the crews that are working this week. It is brutal. You know,
it is brutal. I'll tell you what, though. I would much rather do it in this weather than in the cold. That's just me. I don't like the cold.
Well, the cold started bothering me at the end. My hands hurt when they got cold. Not they weren't cold. Yeah. They hurt. But you know what? This heat is so dangerous.
Yeah, all my hands still hurt when it gets cold. I just never got out of that.
Yeah. Hello, Brody.
Here comes the fire puppy.
So
he's going inside. Too hot.
It is. When I was incident commander running an incident and the weather was like this, I would load up, and I know you did the same, I would load up the troops very early on. I would call a second alarm for a room and contents fire just because you run the guys through one cylinder and they're done. You know, they're soaked. They've lost a couple pounds in sweat. Their body temperature is through the roof, well over 100. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the reasons in how we kill firefighters at fires is the heat exhaustion. You know,
it's important to rehab, rotate, you know, all that stuff. It's so, so important, you know. So here's a question I got for you. Because I've done a couple of classes in the last month or two up in Connecticut. And the department site I've been at, they don't use mutual aid. And, like, you know, I had heard this from Nick Papa early on when I first met him, you know. But I thought it was more the exception than the rule. But, you know, I've been wandering sort of through some of these departments up there doing some training. And, you know, all good guys, all working real hard and everything. But they, like, across the board, like, they don't believe in mutual aid. You know, we can handle it ourselves and we don't bring mutual aid in, maybe a cover assignment, but nobody comes to the scene. And I'm like, how do you deal with weather like this? How do you
know what?
You know?
The only department I know is New Britain, but they're changing. They're starting to call people to the sound now where Nick Papa works. But, he was the only one that I knew that did that. I guess there are a couple more, but as a rule, mutual aid is front-loaded pretty quickly here. You know, most of our departments are small, you know, 100-man departments, 60-man departments. You got to do mutual aid. One of the things I've always said is that a lot of people who do mutual aid, especially the smaller volunteer departments, they don't train with their neighbors. And then when you got the big job, they call in the next community. You know, they can't communicate on the radio systems. They have different procedures. And I think training with your mutual aid department, at least occasionally, I can't say you do it the same way you train your troops, but you should, definitely see how they do things. I remember years ago, there were different departments that had different threads on their 2.5-inch hose. Can you imagine showing up into a neighboring community and the hoses don't hook up?
Well, Jersey City, Hoboken, New York City, they all have different thread than us. We go to the Lincoln Tunnel, we have to use adapters. If you're on the east side of the Lincoln Tunnel, it's got New York thread, and our adapters are in the cabinet. If you go to the west side, the adapters are already on there, and New York City has to remove them.
Wow.
Yeah, interesting, right? But Jersey City and Hoboken use the New York Corporation thread, just like New York City. So when we go down there, their hydrants, their everything they have is New York Corporation, and we have to use adapters, on just about everything.
Yeah.
It's really
the fire service, as good as we are, we're so dumb sometimes. You know, every plumbing fixture in the world uses National Pipe Thread, NPT. The fire department doesn't use NPT. But if you order a fire truck, the pipe coming out from the pump that they put on, that has the New York Corp or whatever you're using, is hooking to NPT.
Same with standpipe. Standpipes and sprinklers in a building, they have to put your thread on in order for you to get on it. Yeah, it's kind of interesting, right? Well, we like to be different. And we are.
And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. And what brought this up to me that made me want to talk about this tonight, I belong to a group that says, I think it's called Volunteer Firefighters Group. I'm not sure, but it's a Facebook thing. And they discuss things. And, one of the things that bothers me about the group is they're always talking about their light packages on the vehicles instead of the last training they went to. And that, not all of them, but it kind of makes me nuts. Let's talk about your training, how you do your hose packs, how you stretch your lines. But they're talking about, where they can get the best light package for their pickups, and it just, I think we're focusing on the wrong place. But that's a different subject. One of the questions asked, the guy said, does any department besides mine who aren't interior certified to run for office? I didn't respond because I'm not looking for a debate or a fight with anybody, but I was like, why is that even a question? If you're not an interior certified fire, how can you be lieutenant, captain, chief, run a fire? How can you do any of that? And I didn't get into the discussion. I just moved on, didn't look at it. But it said the differences in so many departments, from small 5 or 10 man volunteer departments to 11,000 men in New York City, all have promotional processes of some type and how different they all are. And, and I think, like in Jersey, you have county tests, I believe, for promotions, right?
No, you have a state exam.
Okay, so you have a state exam. Where I work, or actually in Connecticut, every department runs their own. Some of them have consortiums where 10 departments will run a test together. But for the most part, departments do their own promotions. It has nothing to do with the state. So before we get into this, I want to talk a little bit about one of the most important decisions a fire department, a fire chief, a city council, or an individual firefighter can make. Are they prepared to take on that job? Being a lieutenant in a fire company or a captain in a fire company or an incident commander at a fire is a big, big responsibility. My God, people's lives at your hands. There are national standards, you know, so you lose a firefighter or you lose a civilian because something was done wrong. The courts today and the lawyers will hang you out to dry. And I know there's a couple of incidents in New Jersey, and we know the people that were involved in these, where they took him to court and said, the lawyer said to him or them, occasions, and what training do you have to be able to run a fire incident and do incident command? And if you can't produce that you've been trained, that you know what you're doing, they could take your home and quite possibly even put you in jail, I mean, for negligence and a death of a firefighter. And it happens all the time. So I believe that most people take it too lightly, especially in the smaller fire departments. And I'll discuss that in a little bit about the elections and stuff. Just because you're the most popular guy doesn't mean you're going to be the best fire officer. Just because you're the best firefighter doesn't mean you're going to be the best officer. You know, you're good, you're strong, you know how to stretch a hose, you know how to pull a ceiling. But do you know why you're doing all that? But that person becomes a captain somewhere, you know. So I'd like to start with how New Jersey does it. So tell me, is it like an annual thing or every couple of years or every couple of months? How often do they run the test and what do the tests consist of?
Okay, so you kind of got to actually split it a couple of ways. The first, we'll start with the volunteer agencies. The volunteer agencies have generally elections every 2 years, from what I understand. Most departments have a chief in there for 2 years, which is nice. Which is nice, and nicer than 1 year, but not quite as good as three. You know, they get some things done, but like they're not in long enough to, you know, really, really make a difference. And some of them are doing very well with the. They have to have a certain criteria in order to be an officer, in order to be a chief, and they run right along the lines of the Division of Fire Safety, which is, you know, the recognized, like, educational standard sort of in New Jersey. So in order to have, like, Fire Officer 1 or Fire Officer 2, you have to have certain criteria. I know Fire Officer 1, you need Fire 1, Fire 2, you need Company Officer, you need Incident Safety Officer, Drill Ground Instructor, Instructor 1, you need 12 hours of building construction, 24 hours of tactics, to maybe a little more. Now, that's just a suggested. You don't have to have it, but some of the departments are starting to look in that direction. In a career department, again, you don't have to have that, but they are all moving to that direction. I think eventually it's going to be mandated. In the career side, like that part is, you know, good to have, I guess, but the career side is guided by the Civil Service Commission. The Civil Service Commission, they provide exams, and there's a book list. There's normally a written exam and an oral exam for every rank. You get on a list, and then when the department wants to certify a list, say they want to make 5 guys, they might certify 10. And there's a lot of political issues that get involved in there. You know, you look at it, you say, okay, who's behind you? Who's ahead of you? You know, who do you need to be ahead of in order to get promoted? And then you also have some departments in New Jersey that are what we call chief's tests. They hire or they promote from a chief's test. They're not civil service. So, you know, places like Maplewood and I think Edison, places like that, they utilize a chief's test. And they hire somebody to come in and do it. And they generally have a book list, not usually as comprehensive as the civil service book list, but they have a book list. I actually have written a couple of exams for chief's tests in New Jersey.
They use the private companies that, you know, like that go around that do tests. Yeah, that's starting to become big in Connecticut too. You know, they're getting companies.
I don't get asked too often because the last exam I wrote, almost everybody failed it.
Well, that means you have high standards.
Well, you know, listen, I do, you know, but that's kind of how they do it in New Jersey. But most of them, the civil service, including the hiring, they just announced the hiring to New Jersey. It was on hold for 4 years because of the COVID. But they just announced that I think July 6th it came out, and the closing date is August 30th. So it's a very, you know, it's a big exam, big cycle coming up because, you know, nobody's been able to take the test since like 2018. You know, that's another thing. Civil service runs both the promotionals and the hirings.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question about the civil service. This is something that bothers me. Where I tested for promotions, you know, it was based on a reading list, you know, so the reading list may be John Norman's handbook of company officer's handbook of tactics, Anthony Avillo's Fireground, you know, command, you know, blah, 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 blah. And the particular department's SOPs. So one of the things that bothers me looking at it from the outside with a state civil service test is they're asking generic questions. I am going to be running, say I'm testing for battalion chief. I'm going to be running a fire in Wallingford using Wallingford's SOPs and mutual aid partners and apparatus that I use. So when I'm asked a question about what I would do as a battalion chief, I'm answering questions where I would be the battalion chief. When you take a state test, you know, you talked about Edison. How big is Edison? How many men?
Edison's probably, I'm thinking probably maybe 70, 80 guys.
Okay, 70, 80 guys. How many are in North Hudson Regional?
Like 350.
Okay, 350. How many are in Newark or Hoboken?
Newark, probably around 700. Hoboken's maybe 100.
Okay, so you're the same. The people are taking a test that work in a 60 or 70 man department are taking a test and getting rated against people working 700 man departments. They're different animals, and that's one of the things I don't like about a state civil service test.
Yeah, they're not getting rated against them, but they're, you know, they're sort of operating as per the same standard, you know, like some of the, like, for instance, I know like a town like Maplewood, they'll use book lists, but they'll also use their own SOPs, you know, which is good. And what the state does, put like a paper. Yeah. The state puts something out that is like, okay, this is what you're going to do. They kind of give you SOPs based on, you know, I guess the, you know, what they think is the best practices. It's okay, but it's not the best. You know, and, you know, it's not the best. It certainly is a lot to be desired, but all these cities, for them to have to pay to run their own promotional exam would cost them way too much money. And these cities just don't have that money, you know, so they utilize the Civil Service Commission.
Okay, that's interesting, something I didn't think of. But, you know, I just think the best person should be appointed to the job for the job they are getting. That's all. Now I have another question. So say Newark or Jersey City gets a list. They got 10 guys on the list. Do they have to take number one?
No, there's a rule of three. So you got to take somebody in the first three. But let's say you take number three, you skip one and two. You can't skip one and two again. But most departments, like North Hudson, I don't believe we've ever skipped anyone. Most departments don't do that. It just leaves a lot of bad blood. What they normally do instead of skipping is if, you know, if they want to get to number three, they'll make three. And then they'll find a spot for them somewhere. You know, they'll, you know, put them in headquarters or they'll float them or something like, think is a really good idea, you know. Don't skip anybody. That just puts a bad taste in everyone's mouth, and it puts the entire department on a defensive.
Well,
you know,
the thing about that, there are some people that should never be officers. And
they read a book,
and I'll call it photographic memory, although I don't believe that that really exists. But they'll read a paragraph or read a book, and they'll say, you ask them what was the 17th paragraph on fire ground strategies, and they'll recite it word for word. So when they sit down and take a written test, they can quote it back almost verbatim. So they'll do really well in the test, but they can't work with people and they can't make a decision on the fire ground. You know,
yes, I know the way the exam is set up in New Jersey is it's scenario based, and the scenarios are based on the they're based on the books, but they wouldn't ask you, okay, what are the seven things that Brunicini says about incident command? They're not asking you a question like that. They used to do that, but they're not doing that anymore. And I think that's a move into the right area.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
They're making you apply. You know, they're making you apply the information rather than just know the information, which is, you know, a higher form of learning. So they're making you do that, which I think is good.
Yeah. Well, you know, you talked about hiring companies. I got hired to be on the promotional panel in one of the largest cities in Connecticut. And because of some discrimination issues and lawsuits and stuff, they came up with this list. So they hired fire officers, and I don't know why they hired fire officers to sit in this test. So they give you a question, and you show slides and videos, and then you ask them, what would you do if you were the first in-engine company officer? And you answer them. What I have is to score them is a bullet list. You know, first alarm, second alarm, mutual aid, all that. And if they say it, they get a check. I did one, and a guy came in, and every fire did the same thing. He would call a second alarm. He would stretch a backup line. He would call a third alarm, even if it was a room and contents fire. But he doesn't get marked wrong for saying that because he got the checkbox for the first alarm. Do you know what I mean? And this guy scored really well. Another guy later on in the day came in, probably a 20-year veteran. He was asked a question. He was very pensive. He'd look at you. Well, what I would do is I would stretch the line. I would go to the front door, feel the door, take a look, have my pump operator charge the line at the door, and then we'd force the door, we'd stretch, we'd do blah, 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 okay? But you could see he thought about it, but he didn't say all the correct words, but he would have been a much better fire officer than that guy who just went blah, blah.
Yeah.
What he did, he puked out all, and I thought it was but to make it fair to everybody, they made it this simple, and there was no discussion on whether Jim Duffy thought it was the best way to fight a fire, or he answered the question the way he was supposed to. Do you know what I mean? And I think sometimes we're trying so hard to write a perfect test.
Yeah. In New Jersey, they've almost made it like a game on the promotional. Like, that's why, you know, we had our company study group. Turpac has a company called Promotional Prep. There's other companies around, and we help people get promoted. Like, we know what they're looking for. And I got to say that even though it is kind of canned in a way, a test is always good for a fire department. People are always in the books. We've never left a student where he was a robot. The students that we utilize were always better after they took the courses that we gave. And I truly believe that. But, yes, there are some people that, you know, they just regurgitate what it is, and they can't translate that into, you know, real world operation. You know,
I agree, and it's a hard thing to do. You know, when I took promotional tests, it was 50% written, and 50% an oral interview. And how they did that, nobody from my department could be on the interview panel. They would bring chief officers, or if you're testing for lieutenant, they would bring captains from other, from different places throughout the state. So there'd be no nepotism, or, you know, you can't totally rule that out, but no favorites while you're testing.
Yeah.
So they were weighted 50%, and then they came up with a list. And after that list, there would be a chief's interview. You know, you scored number one. What would you do your first day when you walk in as the shift commander of your shift? You know, that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
Sometimes, although it very rarely happens, sometimes people have been skipped because, you know, I would order them to do everything, you know, and that's, even though you know what to do on the fire ground, that's not a way to run a company or a shift.
You put out more fires in a firehouse than you do on a fire ground, you know?
Oh, my God, yes.
yeah. But, yeah, no, you're right. Like, when you have those type of assessment centers and, you know, more like soft environment type questions, I think that's vital too. But again, you know, those are one, they're hard to grade. They're very, very subjective. You know, how do you know who hit all the right parts? And it's kind of tough, you know, in a way. That's why, you know, it's hard to run exams like that.
Absolutely. You know, I know there are places where you came in and there was an inbox and you had to go through the inbox and sort of, what would you do first? What would you put off for later? What would you just not do? You know, cause you know, you have all the notes from the staff, you know, little sticky notes, you know,
I've never done an inbox. I've practiced on inbox, but they never did that in New Jersey. They had sort of threatened it, but they never did it. You know, that's interesting. Well, listen, you practice that every day when you're a chief officer is an inbox.
Oh, my
God.
Who
needs this?
You know
who needs that? What's going on here? You know, and you got sticky notes everywhere.
I wish I was prepared for that. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's something that you can't really prepare for.
Oh,
my God.
That's
trial by fire. That's you know, trial and error. That's you know, when you don't do the right thing, somebody makes sure you know you didn't do the right thing. So now that becomes more of a priority next time. And, you know, you learn it as you go. And that again, falls under the under the auspices of mentorship, too. You know, you have somebody that brings you along. They kind of teach you that before you know, the lesson comes before the
test comes before the lesson.
The test comes before the lesson, exactly. Sometimes,
right.
But not always.
No, but in situations like that, I can remember one time I had an angry woman on the truck room floor, and someone called me in the office and said, there's an angry citizen here in the office. So I come down, and this woman starts screaming and cursing at me and calling me a racist and, you know, blah, 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 blah. She was so angry, and she just kept going and going and going. I'm like, what's the ambulance brought my husband to Yale. I wanted him to go to Mid-State. Well, Yale has a cath lab. The person had ST elevation, MI. He was ready to box. He needed to be catheterized and have a stent put in. The local hospital she wanted to go. But the reason I brought him there was because I was racist and didn't want to listen to her. And I wasn't even on scene, but I was in charge, you know? So she was, I actually said, ma'am, I'm about to lose my temper, so this conversation is over. I'm going back to my office. Here are the reasons why, but I have to leave because I was about to say something that you should never say to a citizen. You know,
yeah,
and
but
I just said,
probably didn't even know you were in charge. You just looked like the oldest
guy.
Yes, she
did.
Started yelling at you.
No, at the time I wasn't so old, but yes. But it was just like, you know what? The paramedic saved your husband's life. You know, I'm sorry you have to take a cab to New Haven. But you know what? After it was all said and done, her husband actually came in and bought cake for us. you know, and said thank you. He wanted to meet the paramedics and all that. But it's just like,
nice,
you know, but you walk down the stairs to the truck, and all of a sudden someone's, I mean, literally in my face, like a foot away, screaming and like spitting at me. And I was like, okay, my name is Duffy. I'm about to lose it. You got to end this now.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, again, the test before the lesson, you know, like, you know, and these are, are the things that, you know, you come across that you learn, and you know, you only have one job with stuff like that, is to try and resolve it, you know, and, you know, you can't push it off. You can't, you got to resolve it, you know, and how you resolve it, you know, a lot of times you're going to be wrong. You're going to fumble the ball a little bit, you know, and you know, that's just what comes with it. But, you know, if you have an open mind and you're willing to learn, then you're going to take that experience and you're going to, you know, get something positive about it, even though the lady was screaming at you.
Well, the thing about people, though, you learn and you learn how to deal with it. And you know, you try to diffuse things and, you know, you try to explain why and, you know, and you try to look from their point of view. I'm a gray-haired, old, white guy, so, you know, there's assumptions she's making about me, and I understand that. I grew up in New York. I get it. And, you know, we're all different, and people have assumptions they make all the time. But that's one incident, so you resolve. But then there's the employee issues. How you deal with one employee, and it worked out really well. You try with another employee, and there's that fumble you just talked about. You know what?
Yeah.
It probably wasn't the best way to handle this guy. You know, my commute to and from, I always thought about how my interactions with the people that worked with me could have been handled better. Even if everything mm-hmm. came out great, but what could I have said that was better to motivate this guy to do a better job, or someone you think should be a lieutenant who doesn't want to be a lieutenant, you know, what could I have done to motivate him to take the next step? You know, is mm-hmm. it fear of failure, or, you know, so you learn every single day. And you know what? I still look back at decisions I made in the past and, you know, how I could have handled it better. Now that I see who they've grown to be as, you know, replacing me or something. And, And you know what? It's impossible to test for that, but sometimes when you're making promotions, the handwriting's on the wall who these people are. You know, you got that guy, the testing process is coming up, and he's a slug. He's always been a slug, but there's an opening mm-hmm. for first level company officer. Now all of a sudden, he's doing everything good. He's a smart guy, mm-hmm. he's studying. And he does really, really well. But you know, the day he comes in, maybe a year after he comes in, when he's off his probationary time as an officer, he's going to become that slug again.
He's going to start the coast. But I have seen guys turned around, and I can't tell you how many. You know, you see, and that's the reward, you know, when you know, you have a good program where you're training your officers, you're getting your officers, you know, to buy into the programs that you train. And you get guys that, you know, turn around. Listen, I know a lot of guys that were better officers than they were firefighters. And I know guys that were better firefighters than they were officers. I know guys that were better chiefs than they were captains, you know, and guys better captains than they were chiefs. It's just your personality and, you know, lots of different factors, I guess, right?
There's a ton of factors. And you're absolutely right, but the problem with the promotional process is you can't test for this.
No.
You can't, because most of the job is interpersonal skills. Yes, knowing fire behavior, understanding building construction, how it can work for or against you, knowing your apparatus, your friction loss, you know, your all of that stuff will make you a good fire ground officer. But like you said, most of the fires are in the firehouse. So you have to keep people motivated, keep people working together as a team. You know, you think these Major League Baseball managers, everybody loves each other and coasts every day and there's no competition and no egos. You have to work with all that. And it sounds like I'm saying firefighters are bad, but they're certainly not. But we're all different. And what you have to do is make them work as a cohesive. And most of that happens in the fire. It's like what you call the soft skills. And that's probably the most important part of the job. And sometimes we stumble on that. We do. You know, we have our – everybody's not you. I'm a very motivated, driven person. Everybody that worked on my shift was not. And that was something difficult for me to learn, that everybody doesn't love being a firefighter. They like being a firefighter. They love their job. They're good at their job. But they don't feel the same way I do. And sometimes you early on, after I got promoted, that was one of the things I couldn't understand. You have the best job in the world. How can you be, you know, but once you learn to understand them, they understand you, and we all work together better. And as a group, they work better. And at the fire ground,
how can you be better, right?
They always are better. They are. They know their job, and they love doing their job. But it's the downtime for them that's the difficult part. You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's something that's lacking in promotional process. But there's, I don't see a way that you can do that. You know, the assessment center was supposed to be the end all, be all, but it's still not accurate. It's a role play, and it's not the same as the real thing.
My personal feeling is assessment centers are complete bullshit. They just are.
Well, what I do like about them, the interpersonal, like you'll have a discipline problem. When they put the discipline problem in there, you know, the role player has to play it the same way with every candidate. And
it doesn't work that way, though. They had you know why they got rid of it in New Jersey? Because there were people fist fighting.
Get out of here.
There were guys fist fighting. That's why they got rid of New Jersey. And then after the fist fights come the lawsuit. You know, and you know, the problem is you're dealing with human beings, you know, and even the assessors, even the role players are human beings, and they're going to make mistakes. And you know what works for one guy is not going to work for another guy. And sometimes, you know, it's if you can't get a guy to turn, you know, as far as like as a role player, I can't get him to turn. And that's great. You know, I've seen a lot of it. You know, and I just think that it's sort of a losing proposition in a lot of different ways. I don't believe in it. I think it's nonsense. I think that you can take those same situations and turn them into written scenarios. We'll talk about how they're going to handle those things. You know?
Well,
I see both sides of it. I really do. But
well,
I don't.
That's exactly what New York City does. New York City, they have to write essays on the questions.
Yeah.
How would you handle this? Oh, you know, they have to write essays. And,
well,
you know, how it's evaluated, I don't know. But I think that is valid
in New Jersey, to a point. In New Jersey, you don't write essays. You write down a bunch of notes, and then you have like 15 minutes to present. They may actually, at the end of the presentation, they might ask you a few questions to clarify something. But they don't always do that either. You know, they sort of did away with that, no questions. And you have to hit certain points. There's an administrative problem. There's a personnel problem. There's a thing that might have to do with program development. And you have to hit certain things. And in the answers, they'll have bold answers and non-bold answers. If you don't hit the bold answers, hold on a second. If you don't hit the bold answers, you will not pass that. So you have to hit all the bold answers, but all the other answers are all considerations of things that, you know, they look for you to say. And then you will also, like, what they call other plausible responses are things that you might say that, you know, they didn't think about, but are you know, good, you know, good things to say. And, you know, it's I think it's a very good way of doing it, because it's like, listen, I would do this, I would do that, these are the things I would take,
yep.
You know, these are the way I would handle. Like I think that was I think when they went to that in New Jersey, they got it way more right than when they were doing role playing.
Yep. Oh, interesting you say that. We have an acting officer's test that everybody, if you want to be an acting officer on an engine or a truck, you have to requalify every 3 years. So there's
okay.
There's a first in engine scenario. There's a second in engine scenario. There's a first in truck scenario. There's a personnel problem. There's a non-fire emergency, which could be a hazmat or a medical, or someone trapped in a bucket truck on an electric wire or something. So it's a non. And what's this? There's one other. But it doesn't matter. And there's a bullet list. And you know what? We don't make it as hard as a promotional test, but you better be able to fill that role that day as an acting officer. And they have to requalify every 3 years. And, there's paperwork. There's a paperwork scenario. So you have to fill out an infra's report. So they describe a fire to you, and they give you an infra's report. Actually, now they're doing it on the computer, you know, the way they do it today. And they have to be able to enter the report accurately. And that's what the last one was. And I think that's a really good thing, because you throw somebody in that office, they better know how to fill out an infra's report. You know, you have to do it.
Yeah. Well, and most of the time, their infra's report is going to be like a single company response.
Right. It's easy.
You know, so it's not that difficult. It's just a matter of making sure their narrative is good, and they don't just, like, you know, kind of wing it because they don't give a shit. You know, that's one of the things you can't do. You know?
Nope. You know, but also we have an engine company go out on most significant medicals, too. So technically the company office is in charge of the scene. The medic's in charge of the patient, but they still have to fill an infra's report as the fire officer. So medic evaluated, did this, transported to Yale New Haven Hospital, whatever. And that's part of the job. How do you fill out a TPR, time payroll sheet? You know, if you're at one of the outcomes, a single engine house, you got a payroll report. I mean, it's not a big deal. You fill out, okay, Jim Duffy was on engine one, you know, Joe Jones is on engine one, this one was the driver, this one was, you know, whatever.
Right.
But paperwork is, unfortunately, you know, the fire service is not immune to it. And
it's part of the job. Paperwork's part of the job. You got to be able to do it, you know. But, you know, just to go back, we talked about the civil service and one of the disadvantages of that. So you have one single entity creating the exams for, you know, maybe 30 different fire departments. So nobody gets the same exam, right? So I'm not sure which one it was. I want to say Irvington or Hoboken. They got a friggin' wildland fire in the last captain's test. Now, how do you do something like that? You give a wildland fire to friggin' Irvington, right? They actually had one of the North Hudson tests was a fire in an ice cream parlor, and the only exposure was a cornfield. We don't have any cornfields in North Hudson. So that's another disadvantage of the state, you know, the state test where these guys, they don't know, they don't care. And, you know, it was – and I don't think, to be honest with you, I think everybody appealed it, but they said, you know what, everybody got the same test. It was on the reading list that you had, so all appeals are denied.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm in Hoboken. I'm not going to pay that much attention to the friggin' wildland fire chapter because we just don't have – we don't do that. Okay, it's kind of crazy.
Yep.
It's kind of crazy.
Funny you say that. Going off subject a lot, so I'm going to go off a little more. I was a volunteer firefighter, and you know that, on Long Island. It was pretty densely populated where I was. So we would have a brush fire. What it would be, it would be the grass along the railroad tracks. The spark would kick from the train,
right,
and it would start a fire. You know, you'd go there with a booster line, knock it down, and you'd be back home in 15 minutes. So my brother-in-law became a volunteer out on Eastern Long Island where the Pine Barrens are, almost like the Pine Barrens you have in Jersey.
Right.
So Maureen's sister calls and goes, Keith just went to a brush fire. And Maureen goes, he'll be back in about 15, 20 minutes. Don't worry about it. 2 days later, he comes back. The fire jumped the Long Island Expressway, which is six lanes across. And it was unbelievable. They were flying in helicopters from New Hampshire. It was pretty bad.
Wow.
Whole eastern end. It's like what's happening out west now. But it's like different worlds, you know.
Yeah,
we've been off subject a long time, but really right on subject. What promotions really are, and how important they are. But the thing we can't fail to do is, after people are promoted, is to train them. The job is not what they think it is. We need to train them what it really is, and some of it they're going to learn themselves. But we have to tell, okay, you're now on engine one, you could be the first, second, or third due engine, blah, blah, blah. Understand your responsibilities, you know, understand you're now responsible for those two or three guys that are on the engine with you. You know, you used to be responsible for yourself. Now, every decision you make affects them and every other firefighter on the fire ground. We need to teach them that.
If you look at fire departments, I would say across the board, the biggest failure of any fire department is the lack of training that they give their officers. I mean, you know, just my experience of looking at it as a whole, you know, some departments do a great job with it, but for the most part, not that many do. And again, you jump back into the volunteer sectors and you know, it's kind of even worse because these guys, you know, their officers, you know, you got an 18-year-old kid. He's a friggin' lieutenant, and you know, there's just not a lot of training, man. There's just not a lot of training, and you know, I guess it's the same with career departments. We didn't have a ton of training in North Hudson for the officers. It's just a week of, you know, paperwork how to fill out paperwork, how to fill out the forms. There wasn't a lot of real formal training for company officers, you know, and I think that's one of the places that fire departments sort of missed the boat.
I 100% agree. And let's take that to the next level. In the assistant chief's roles or chief of department roles, as you travel and do teaching, and I know you do, how often do the chief officer, I'll say the top three people, you know, the two assistants at the top and the chief of department, come to your training when you're training the shift or department?
Very rarely. Yeah, very rarely. I tell you what, the last department I was,
I'd say it's less than 50%.
Definitely. I've noticed they've been better. But again, it depends on the department. But if I look at the you know, down in Monmouth County with the agencies we have down there, you almost never see chiefs in the training. You know, these guys just don't train. They don't come to the academy. You almost never see it. You know, what you do is you see guys that will someday be the chief, which is really good. But usually by the time they get to be the chief, they've stopped their training. You know, you don't see them anymore. You know,
well, your officers are getting trained. So you do training for the officers in a particular department.
Right.
And they're learning procedures. But the guy in charge is not learning the same stuff and doesn't understand what his officers are learning. And that could be detrimental on the fire ground. I'll give you one example, and I hope none of my past chiefs are listening to me right now, but Frank Viscuso, he used to run a page, Command Ops Online, blah, blah, blah. I think he still does, and I think Mike Turpak was with him a little bit on that. And
you know, I really like the stuff. We discuss stuff back and forth via email. A lot went on. And so I asked him, I said, do you do any leadership training? And he said, yeah, I have a class. So Frank Piscuso didn't have a class. He didn't tell me this, but he didn't have a class. He wrote it. And one of the first leadership classes he delivered was at my fire department. So Frank Piscuso, Frank Piscuso comes in, class for the officers. And a couple things really bothered me about this. The chief of training did not allow firefighters to go, only current officers. So I said to him, I said, well, they may be an officer someday. Well, I don't want them to know what you know. And I was like, okay, so the firefighters weren't allowed to go. That was one thing that ticked me off. So the same chief of training comes in, introduces Frank Piscuso, and left. So then I really introduced Frank Piscuso, who he was, what his background was. And the three top chiefs never came in to that class. And it was the first delivery of it was the first delivery of Step Up and Lead. You know, and I think Frank does a great job. He does a good job. You know, he has his routine. But for someone who is just learning how to be a leader, I think it's good stuff. You know, and but again, my bosses paid a lot of money for Frank, more than what he was worth at that time. But but they had extra money in the budget. They paid him a lot of money, and they didn't come. And that really upset me. Just recently, I was in a combination department near me, and I did some training. None of the chiefs came. You know, and I just was like, you know. But the men loved it. And I think, you know, we had a great day, and we learned a lot, and we shared a lot. But that's a shame. And on that note, we were just talking about getting promoted and not being a leader yet. I want to read a quote to you by Ernest Malone, the chief of Indianapolis Fire Department. And I know you heard him say this. Malone says, you may be their officer, but make no mistake. Your crew will decide if you are their leader or not.
Oh,
and then he said, then he goes on to say, don't lead by the power of example of your power, lead by the power of your example. But what he says, even though you got the captain's bars, you may be their boss, but you may not be their leader. They will decide, and you have to reach and help them decide that you are their leader. And
and you do that every single day.
Yeah, and you fail lots of days. I'm telling you, you do.
Sure.
You know, you're human, and, you know, you're tired. You got 15 things on your desk, and you're a little impatient with some of your guys sometimes. And that's dead wrong, and we all know it's wrong. But it happens sometimes. And but you make up for it. You know, if you're a good boss, you do make up for it. Now, let's get back to the promotional process. Let's get to volunteer departments. There are volunteer departments in Connecticut that actually have a testing process. And to put your name in, even though it's voted, you have to pass a test. And I don't know what their qualifications are. You have to pass, and it's still a vote. Sometimes, actually, I know one department only that does this. It is a promotional test, and the person who scores number one becomes the officer for the spot. And I don't know what the term is. Maybe it's a 2-year term. Maybe it's a 3-year term. Maybe it's a 1-year term. I don't know, but it's promotional. But there's so many departments where I live, and it's purely an election. And some of them don't even have any requirements. There are chiefs in this state, and I know in New Jersey, that aren't even firefighter one. They have no firefighter one, and they're standing in front of a burning building
leading people, making decisions, life and death decisions.
Well, in New Jersey, you have to have 5-5-1. I think some people in certain places have gotten away with not having it, but that's the exception rather than the rule. But sometimes the only class they have is 5-5-1. But a lot of departments are starting to say, look, you have to meet the criteria of what the state is saying you need for fire officer one. And guys are there, you know, there are departments that are fighting this. You know, who are you to tell me I have to have these classes and this stuff? And, you know, I'm like, you know what? You don't have this stuff. Don't be a frigging officer, man.
Nope. You need to be a firefighter.
It's crazy. You there? I'm not sure if anybody can hear Duffy here.
Can you hear me now?
You there?
Can you hear me now?
No, I'm having a hard time.
How about now?
Better.
How about now? Okay.
Better.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. I'm wearing a new headset, so I just moved a little bit. So anyway, in New Jersey, I've been reading a lot that there are firefighters fighting the facial hair thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another big one, fighting the facial hair. Yeah, well, the state, the Division of Fire Safety and the DCA have been going out, and they're actually looking at pictures in the newspaper and things like that, and they're finding departments for guys that are, you know, are bearded, and they should.
I agree.
Crazy.
I agree.
You know, and then they try and tell you, I've been fighting fires for 30 years. I've never had a problem with a beard as a firefighter. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's crazy.
Right. Until you do. And then when they find the cause of death was carbon monoxide inhalation through the leak in your mask. And then the family decides... And then they sue the chief. You allowed my husband to come to a fire with a beard. When the state says you can't do it.
You know, I my personal feeling is they should sue the chief. But, you know, listen, everybody's got their, you know, it's all about personal responsibility.
Oh, I know that. I know that. Everything
you know,
about personal responsibility.
That's the first thing I talk about in the leadership class, personal responsibility. You don't got that, man, what the hell else you got? You know, just move on, man. You don't got personal responsibility. Move on. That's got to be brought to the table.
So do you think it should be legislated, this election thing, and requirements to be a fire officer? You know, minimum standards to be a fire officer. Why? My question, again, personally.
I agree with that completely. I agree with that completely, but you're going to get such pushback from, you know, a lot of agencies. You know, the National Volunteer Fire Council is going to push back, you know, and all I hear at Monmouth County, you're killing the volunteers, you know.
No, we're saving the volunteers.
They don't need no help.
No. Oh, you know? It's too bad. And you know what? I'm glad there are people who want to be volunteer fire officers. I was one. I loved it. It was a very stimulating part of my life. I enjoyed it immensely. I learned a lot about people, about myself, about fire, which drove me to take more classes. But the thing is, if you want to make that leap and you want to be a captain in a volunteer fire department, better yourself. Improve yourself.
Yeah.
That's how you be that good officer. Just because it's your
come
turn.
Across. I mean,
you know,
I've
like
come
you
across
said,
some great volunteer fire officers.
Oh my God!
Great
yes, officers. Absolutely.
You know? But I've also come across a lot of really bad ones that think they're really good.
Yes. Well,
one of the things that you said about New Jersey, the same thing on Long Island, it's two-year terms. So you're 2 years as a lieutenant, mm-hmm. you're 2 years as a captain, 2 years as a deputy chief, whatever, however it works, 2 years as the chief. The only problem with that is you start running out of people because it's, oh, it's my turn. That's why I'm running. You know, it's my turn. I've been here 15 years. But what have you done in 15 years? Have you taken any strategy and tactics or building construction classes or anything, you know, ICS classes? I mean, NIMS, they're these volunteer departments, and I'm not picking on volunteers. They're career departments that are just as bad, combination departments. They don't have NIMS training, you know?
No.
And, you know, what happens is OSHA comes in and cites them. You know, they fine them $500, and then they don't get – their records don't get checked for 5 years, and they still don't have NIMS training for all their people.
Yeah. No, so, you know, we don't need that here. We've gotten along, you know, we've gotten along without it for so long, and, you know, and they, you know, they do need that. And then, you know, when something really bad happens, they wonder why. There's no leadership.
Yep. I,
you know,
I agree with you. And, so we talked a lot of promotional requirements or promotional preparing for it. Let's talk about what you're doing on the side there, the study groups.
Yeah.
I think the study groups, if you want to become an officer in a volunteer or career department, those study groups are awesome. I think they'll not only teach you how to be a better test taker, but I think they – ultimately will make you a better officer. What's your feeling on that?
I think, listen, I've been in that game since like 1997. And I can't tell you, you go across the state of New Jersey, just about every chief officer in North Jersey and maybe Central Jersey and a lot down South Jersey, just about every chief officer, every chief of department has come through our classes. Just about every single one. And they've all, you know, Jersey City, Newark, Patterson, like all of them. And they all will say that, you know what, the classes helped me a lot. I mean, listen, we're successful because they do all the work. We just guide them. We guide them on what they need to know and what they need to figure out. But, you know, we push them into the books. And you know, it's like New Jersey City University. Our students are successful because we push them into the books. They have no choice. If they're not in the books, they fail the course. Our job there, what our thing in NJCU was, we're going to create the best officers in the country. And, you know, because we're going to ensure that they know what they're doing, you know. And, you know, we've been very successful at that, you know. And it's a matter of, you know, it's a matter of them doing. You know what? The department is only responsible for a little bit of this stuff. In the end of the day, it's the responsibility of the individual to pick up that book, to make a deliberate move towards being a better fire officer and being a better firefighter and, you know, personal responsibility and giving a shit. That's what it's all about, you know. I mean, you just don't magically become a great fire officer because you passed the test. But your motivation to pass the test is really what starts moving you in that right direction. And then, you know, once you have, you know, some good mentors, you have people that sort of are guiding you along the right way, and you have the motivation to do it, you know, like everybody that, you know, you've come across, the, you know, the Frank Ritchies and the PJ Norwoods and, you know, a guy like Rick Gibson and all these guys, you know, you've bettered yourself by personal endeavor. And I think
Absolutely.
That's one of the most important things, you know. You show me a guy that hasn't bettered himself by personal endeavor, I'll show you a guy that's not going to be a good officer or a good firefighter or a good team player, maybe not even a good human being.
I could say probably not. But here's the thing about what you just said. The oral interview, half of our promotional test, one of the questions usually is, what have you done to prepare yourself for the next step in your career, a fire captain or whatever? Those guys that went to the prep classes and went to the extra building construction classes, not just the state academy class, but
got all the state academy certifications as well, but went to seminars and went to FDIC and went to New York State Fire Chief Show.
Yeah, did all the right things.
They'll list that and say, I've done this, I've done this. I've actually been mentoring some of my fellow firefighters for the lieutenant's position while I'm studying for the captain's position. You know, all of that will come out on the oral interview, although that's not on the written test. But that's why I love the oral part of the exam. Whether it should be 50% or 40% or whatever, I do believe that's an important aspect.
I do
essays or do what you said you guys do in Jersey, you know, you do a presentation. I think that all will show your communication skills. It will show the effort you put into the promotion, how important it is to you, and how much you care about the organization you're working for.
Right. Yeah. As I said, I'm not a big fan of the role playing and that type of assessment, but I think you got to be able to communicate. I think you have to know your stuff well enough. This is one of the things we would tell our students when they first came into the class. We gave them a list of about 30 things. And we said, you need to be able to talk for 2 minutes extemporaneously on every one of these things. And that's what their goal was. And sometimes we get a guy to come in and we would just say, all right, stand up. And he's coming on class, stand up. We say, okay, talk to me about ground ladders for 2 minutes. And after about 15 seconds, the guy was done. You know, and we said, look, you know, this is where you have to go. You have to be able to talk about this stuff. You have to know, you know, knowledge is the first thing. Application and synthesis and all that is the rest. But you got to have the knowledge in order to be able to, you know, walk the walk. Because if you can't, you don't have the knowledge, you ain't walking the walk. Well, you can't talk the talk, so you can't walk the walk, you know?
Say that again.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't even know what I said. Play it back. If you don't have the knowledge, you can't talk the talk, so you can't walk the walk.
Right. Unfortunately,
wow.
There are some people who have to learn to talk.
Write that down and send it to me.
I don't even know what you said. I'm old. I forgot already.
I'm going to need to use that for something or other.
But one of the things, there are people that need to be taught how to speak and do the talk. There are people who are brilliant. They know everything about a ladder. They know how to throw a ladder. They know how to raise a ladder. They know how to inspect it. But now you put them in front of a group, and they're like, blah, 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 and they can't do it.
Yeah.
So they have to practice and learn.
Yeah. Well, you got to come out of your comfort zone, you know?
Yep.
That's a real big piece, man. You got to come out of your comfort zone. And if you come out of your comfort zone, you know, I mean, listen, you were an instructor. How did you feel the first time you were an instructor?
Oh, my
you
God.
Know? How did you feel? You know, it's a very intimidating, you know, situation. You know, the first time you actually stand in front of people, you teach something, you know. But it's a matter of, you know what, starting from scratch and keep on scratching.
I remember my first two instructor presentations. It was a 5-minute presentation. I had to show people how to load a stapler. I had to do a 5-minute presentation, how to load a stapler.
You had to show people how to do a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah. And then this goes back a long time. A lot of our listeners aren't even going to know what I'm talking about. We were using overhead projectors for classes. So the title of my presentation was Adding Color to Your Overhead Transparencies. So what I did, I walked in front of the room, stood with my hands at my side, and I had a black and white slide up there. And I stood straight, stiff as a board. I said, good afternoon. Welcome to my presentation on adding color to overhead presentations. As you will notice.
What'd you do, color in with a magic marker?
No. Then I said, this is very, very boring, isn't it? And then I put a color slide up that had graphs and circles and arrows. Then I started dancing, you know, jumping around. Now we're going to really learn about this. You know, so I just showed how the point was adding color to your transparencies instead of black and white print.
Right.
Is, is a better. And now, you know, you look at PowerPoint, you're adding videos, pictures, graphs. We've come a long way, buddy.
We have. We definitely have.
But anyway, bottom line, and this goes for both sides, I think I said it at our introduction, is doing the promotion, promoting somebody is one of the most important jobs you can do as a chief officer. If you are a firefighter and you want to get promoted, it's one of the most important things you can do is prepare yourself for the job and for the test. It's up to you, and it's up to the chief to promote the best people to do the job. But prepare them. Train them. You know, what do they call it? Succession planning?
Mm-hmm.
Especially at the chief officer level. We don't prepare people to be the number one and two guy in the department. We don't do it. It's all a secret. You know, eventually you're going to retire and somebody has to replace you. You know what? I got to pin the battalion chief on the guy that took my spot. He asked me to pin his badge on him. And I thought that was awesome. I think it should become a tradition. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
But he invited me back. It was about
when we do Fire One, we often have like the parents, you know, a lot of them are chiefs in the volunteer department, and they present the, you know, the recruiter graduation with like their helmet shield or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a nice tradition, man.
I agree. Yeah, my wife pinned my badges for all my promotions, both volunteer and career. She pinned them on me. You know, and in Wallingford, it's pretty much been a tradition that the wife or the kids do it, you know, their children or something, on the promotions.
Just from Connecticut, you know, there's a lot of family and lots of cotton and soft and fluffy and cuddly stuff up there.
It's like Nebraska.
Exactly. Well, you're a cuddly guy.
I am. I actually cuddled somebody recently, and she was offended by it.
Oh boy, that's not a story I need to hear.
No, there was nothing to it on my part, but I guess, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter.
It's all good. But listen, brother, my phone is dying. I'm outside, and my phone is going to die in about.
And you know what?
Minutes, so
I've gone everywhere I thought we could go with this, and then some. But remember,
good conversation, man.
You know, and I think remember how important your job is. The public's life, the citizens' life, are in your hands. Your members, brother and sister firefighters, they're in your hands. So take it seriously.
Amen,
brother. We'll see you when we see you. By the way, did you put in for Les Lucas?
No, because that's what day?
It's in February. It's the same as the Missouri one.
Hold on, my dog's barking like a leather in the house.
Yeah, I'm either going to be, you know what, I might be at the North Florida Fire Expo, or I might be in Missouri, I don't know. February 4th to 6th is the North Florida Fire Expo, so I think that I'm going to be there.
I don't know, you know, so I put in for it this year, and I told Tracy that I may not be in Missouri just for change of pace.
Right.
You know,
I got to just see when Tracy's doing Missouri. So we'll figure it out. Anyway, my phone is dying here, brother. I wish you the rest of the summer is a great summer, and you and your family.
Yep. I'm going to call you tomorrow. There's something I want to chat with you about.
Okay. I'm around. Actually, tomorrow is my daughter's birthday.
Okay, I won't call you tomorrow. I got to go to the eye doctor again the last time. Okay, you got it.
Okay.
To all our listeners, you all stay safe out there, and until next time.
Yeah, we love you out there. Stay cool in the heat, and everybody be safe out there.
Thank you, sir.
Take care of each other. All right, brother. Peace out.
Bye-bye.